and welcome listeners and Patreon subscribers to the 9-8 podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground right here in Australia. My name is David Ellis, and as always, joining me from the west coast of Australia is the main man himself, Mr. Alex Hogg. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing all right, despite the fact that I'm currently sort of slammed into a cupboard. I'm actually recording on the road today, hence why the audio is going to, from my end, is going to sound a bit shit.
As I said to you before we came on air, Dave, I'm fairly certain the podcast, it's like, I don't think you've done a podcast until you record one in a wardrobe.
Yes.
Like, I have seen pictures on Twitter of, like, professional podcasters' setups with pillows and coats and recording in wardrobes and various sorts of things. So, yeah, this is just one of those things you just tick off on the list of things you do when you podcast.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I got to say, it's if we feng shuied the coats a little bit, it'd be nice in here. So let's jump into this because we've got a reasonably big episode today, just simply because of we haven't put an episode out for a couple of weeks since we did that collaboration episode with Drop the Stylus. So we've got a little bit of follow up here. Hoggy, Dirt Poor Robbins, Dead Horse.
Yes. So we had a listener recommendation from Paul Summer. Thank you very much for your recommendation, Paul, for a record called Dead Poor Robbins. The record is called Dead Horse. Now, as of this time of recording, we haven't listened to the record as much as we would have liked to. It's been a crazy busy week for me over here, so we are going to mention it here, and then we're going to have a talk about it on our next episode. So we haven't forgotten about it, Paul. Don't worry. We just have many, many other things that we needed to talk about here. We're going to talk about that one on the next episode. But thank you very much for your recommendation, Paul. And if anybody else out there has recommendations, please send them through to us.
Absolutely, absolutely. We love hearing a bunch of new music and so on and so forth. As some of you know, I'm curating that massive list of new shit that has come out this year. But that's not everything that comes out, because sometimes the website that I get the information off misses stuff, and, you know, they might be too small that they haven't come up on the website's own sort of searching engines and so on and so forth. So,
or they're like John Young or Pendragon or similar, where they just do not put anything onto the Spotify and onto the streaming, which we will get to in a minute when we jump into the news. Piece of news that we would like to discuss first off is a brand new transatlantic record that has been announced.
Yes.
This one is called The Absolute Universe. Now, it's going to be available in three different versions. There's an abridged version, which is 60 minutes long. There's the extended version, which goes across two CDs and will be 90 minutes long. And then you've got what they're calling the ultimate version, which comes with vinyl, CD, and Blu-rays. Now, after much whinging and legitimate whinging from the fans, the Blu-ray will be available as a standalone purchase. Now, this is something that I think bands doing pre-orders and shit, they should have been doing this years ago. Having, like, instead of, like, you know, you got the different formats. You got the people that only want to hear the music, so you get the single CD or a digital download, whatever, all the way up to the fancy big box set purchase stuff. I've always thought that there should be some sort of, like, pick and mix option where people who want the vinyl can get the vinyl, people who don't want the vinyl can stay away from the vinyl and get the thing, the other sort of things that they want. What do you think about an idea like that?
I think that's not a bad idea. The only thing is, obviously, if you're going to package the lot into one whole big package thing, then it should be cheaper than buying them all individually. You know what I mean? If you buy the CD and then you come back and buy the vinyl and then you buy the Blu-ray, you probably stand to pay a little bit more than if you bought them all at once, all at the same time. That would just be my sensibilities coming in with that. I think the most exciting thing about this album, though, is the fact that it seems like it's going to be a different presentation of the same record, i.e. like a different story arc, if that makes sense. It's the same thing, but maybe told from a bit of a different perspective and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting from what I've read for it. which is exactly what I fucking wanted with the Astonishing. Because they had that whole, you know, the two sides and everything. And I was like, cool, this is going to be a double album. Is it going to be the same story told from, you know, two different perspectives? Because that would be sick as shit.
Yes,
and then
would.
We just got that Disney bloody rip-off.
Yeah, sort of Disney meets Game of Thrones sort of thing.
Exactly.
With the overarching storyline of 2112. That's kind of like my three-sentence review of The Astonishing. I know we did a whole two-hour episode about this record, but if I were to synthesize that down to three sentences, I'd be like, Disney meets Game of Thrones set in the world of Russia's 2112.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm actually really excited for that. I'm excited to hear that. However, I am a bit annoyed that it's not going to be on any streaming services, although I understand why.
Yeah, I mean, I know there were lots of people complaining, and I got into I got into a back and forth with a guy on the internet saying, please put it on Apple Music, and I said, how about buy the records and support the people? To which he responded, as soon as the iPhones are, you know, advanced enough to rip and download CDs for me, I'll get right on that. And he's
No, bullshit. Apple has been one of the biggest
leading
the charge to get rid of the CD in the first place. So fuck you, buddy.
Yes, exactly. I mean, yeah, I didn't want to go down that road because I was trying to push the barrel of digital downloads. But as I did some clicking around, I found that there is legitimately nowhere you can buy this album, like the rest of the Transatlantic back catalog, as a digital download. There is nowhere. Not even Amazon sells this as like a digital thing.
Yeah, see, that's...
I can give you the backstory to why, because up until very recently, this was something that could be done through Neil's record label, Radiant Records. Subsequently, in the recent future, that record label has been bought by Inside Out Music, and we all know what Inside Out Music think of digital downloads.
Yes.
Basically, just like digital downloads, never heard of her. So therein lies the problem with that, is that it just doesn't exist.
Yeah, okay, that's a bit irritating then.
It is. Now, if you do wish to stream it, you can find it on Neil's streaming service, Waterfall, but I understand why some people may not want to pay $6.99 a month just to listen to one band.
Oh, yeah, basically. And, you know, nah. You unfortunately, we are at the point now in the music industry where streaming services like your Spotify's, like, you know, Apple Music, etc., they are a necessary evil, unfortunately. You know, and unfortunately it leaves the door open to things like what Spotify has announced recently, where they're going to allow artists to appear higher in search rankings by giving them less royalties.
Here we go. This is the YouTube thing, right? Where if you pay us a little more money, we'll recommend your shit a bit higher.
Yeah, exactly. So the amount that the artists are already getting, which is piddling,
which is effectively nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be even less because Spotify, you know, it's what, a $3-4 billion company or something like that, and they're paying artists fuck all.
Yeah. We already know. We've already heard what Daniel Exposition on the artist says. Is just make more music. Just crank those widgets even harder.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
I know. Guys got fucking no idea. But anyway.
Indeed. He's not a musician. He's a tech guy, and he used to own, and he was like the CEO of BitTorrent. So we already know what his position is here. We don't need to discuss that any further because we already know what it is.
That's right.
The other final point that I wanted to, that we sort of wanted to get to was, what do you think we're going to get out of the Transatlantic record? Because I don't think I'm talking out of school here. The first four Transatlantic records have all been broadly similar. I mean, we know Neil is a prolific songwriter, and one of the reasons why we don't generally discuss his solo records all that often is because I generally find them all to be pretty much the same. The Transatlantic ones, on the other hand, are a little bit different, but still broadly along the same lines. What do you think, Dave?
Well, yeah, I'm sort of the same. I mean, it's sort of like the Neil Morse Project Mark II, in my opinion.
Like the Neil Morse Project Mark I because it started first, but yeah.
Okay, yes, but you know what I mean. Like it's sort of just like another iteration of that, in my opinion. it doesn't mean that it's bad or weird music or anything like that. It's just, I think we're going to wind up with a pretty typical transatlantic sound, frankly.
Yes, I think so.
You know, I don't think we're going to be seeing anything super duper amazingly revolutionary when it comes to the tones and the content and the themes and so on and so forth of this album. That being said, I'd really like to see a song on here, basically from Mike Portnoy saying fuck you to all the Trump supporters who have been telling him fuck you for the last however long, and I'm not going to listen to your music anymore because you vote for Biden and Harris. Well, guess what? Biden and Harris won. Suck it up, dickheads.
So, oh, man. Like, oh, God. Yeah, we could go down the stack on that one.
Oh, my God.
But... It's the same story. I mean, Portnoy acknowledged it in one of his posts. He's like, yeah, I have family, friends, even bandmates who are Trump supporters, of the Republic, of the GOP and supporters of Trump. So I think that about covers what we wanted to talk about with Transatlantic, and it sort of gives us a nice bridge to talk about another piece of news that has come out over the last couple of weeks, in that the visa costs for UK artists touring the US is about to go up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've talked about this before. We've talked about how hard it is for artists to tour the USA with their restrictive visa conditions, and the fact that I think that this is basically a one-way ratchet, which it only turns in one direction. It's never going to get easier. It's always going to get harder.
Well, so here's the thing as well. It's not just UK artists. It's every artist now. I was talking to some of the guys in Caligula's Horse the other day, and they were saying that because they were supposed to be there earlier in the year and then there was obviously COVID and all that kind of stuff, now they're going to have to reapply for their visas, and the visa cost has like doubled.
So it's gone from
like $400 to like $850 or something like that, $750 or something.
Yeah, filing fees for an O visa. This is from the NME here, which is quoting directly from the Department of Homeland Security. Individuals with extraordinary ability or achievement visas will increase from $460 to $705.
There you go.
And the P visa, which can also be used by family members of the individuals, goes up to $700.
Yeah.
And also the visa times are expected to increase to 15 business days, although frankly, given what I've heard from Aurelian about US business visa days, 15 days would be an absolute miracle. And but a fast track service costs over $1,000 will be available to those needing their application to be dealt with more quickly.
Yeah. And no surprises you there. Why it is that all of these tours for the US take months to plan. And it's generally
and also
speaking,
as well,
not
you'll
because
also-
of what the things are doing, you know.
The other thing you'll also see as well, you'll wonder why said band, like certain overseas band, has pulled out of a festival in America. You dig around deep enough, I guarantee you 99% of the time, it's probably because their visa's just been knocked back.
Yep.
Like, they have to announce that they're coming and they have to have the agents and promoters contracts to get the visa, rah, rah, rah. They put the application in and then it gets knocked back. And so they have to pull out.
They have to pull out. That's right.
And it's several thousand dollars pissed into the wind because of it.
That's right. And it's just ridiculous. I mean, and it wouldn't surprise me, given the fact that we've got Trump still in ostensibly for the next couple of months, wouldn't surprise me if a lot of this was like, oh, this guy looks like he's got a Mexican kind of name. Let's knock him back. You know what I mean?
Ignoring the racism and the business that goes on with the GOP, it's not going to be any better with the Democrats. Okay, sure, yeah, they're probably not going to knock back anyone with a Mexican-sounding name, but they're still going to be just as cautious about, oh, we can't let people in who aren't going to do the right thing and whatever.
Yeah,
it's
true,
like both sides of the political divide here are both pushing in the same direction of like, we have to protect our nation. No government is ever going to say anything different. So
no, and that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, this sort of touches on a wider point of like, you know, Biden is like the savior of America. It's like, no, he's not. We're going to go back to the same sort of general ideals before of like, you know, increasing of the security and increasing of government regulations in Homeland Security and that sort of thing, and probably starting a few wars for the hell of it. Because, maybe. You know, we're still, well, Biden, you've got to remember, you know, Biden and Obama did a lot of bombings, so, but this is not politics. The whole point of the exercise is anyone expecting this to become easier or in a post-COVID, and of course, and then you put the extra layer on top of COVID, of like everyone's going to be a whole lot more stringent about where you've been, where you're going, and whether or not you've got the inevitable vaccine.
Mm, exactly. And I mean, if thankfully at the moment, if you're coming from Victoria, 17 days straight at time of recording without a new COVID infection.
Yeah, that's but awesome. did you see what happened in South Australia overnight?
Yeah, the new 5 new or whatever it was.
Try 13.
13 new sick. Yeah.
And with hundreds more in isolation thanks to contact tracing. So this thing is not going away.
No. No, so, it's not going to go away. It's not going to go away until
everybody gets the vaccine anyway.
That's right. The vaccine that's going to control our minds and Bill Gates is going to use it to watch out.
Yeah. It's all going to be a thing. Yeah. God damn it. Yeah. People are fucking idiots. Anyway. Moving slightly to the left of that, there was another article that came courtesy of Steve Rothery, something he posted to his Facebook page about visa costs for the UK artists touring the EU. For as much as Brexiteers like to bang on about how much they're regaining sovereignty over their borders, that also applies to all the other EU nations too. So they're going to, like, the UK crashes out with a no-deal Brexit, you're going to need a visa to go into every single country.
Yeah, quite literally. And you know what? Tough. They voted for it.
Well, the royal voted for it, but I guarantee you not a lot of musicians did. At least not ones with a brain in their head.
Not at all. I mean, you probably won't necessarily need a visa to go into every single country, I wouldn't think, because it's all Schengen. So,
but no, that's different for travel. If you want to work there, that's a different story.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll need a work permit for every country you're intending to work or gig in. And rules around taxes are different. So in Spain, you have to pay withholding tax. In France, you don't. You used to be able to just sort of deal with that as like a one entity sort of EU thing, but now you don't. And then in Germany, you'll need to verify a contract. So you'll need an agent or promoter's contract to work there. The verification needs a passport. The new Brexity blue UK passports are incompatible with the ID system they use. Thank you very much, fucking Theresa May. So on and so forth. Oh, yeah, and then we get into the fun and interesting topic of Carnets. Now, I'm fairly certain we talked about this when I did the giant interview with Nick Barrett. The short version is that you need, if you have professional equipment that you're carrying across the border, you need to have a Carnet. You need to have a ticket that documents what you've got. Leads, cables, guitars, keyboards, drums, whatever. Mm-hmm. You need one for each instrument or item. Mm-hmm. So if you're, say, I mean, this is talking about an orchestra here, but a saxophone player who plays with a soprano, alto, and tenor saxophone in their bag, you're going to need a Carnet for each single one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about £1,000 straight up. That's just for one instrument or one player. God forbid if you're playing with an orchestra, because you're going to need one for every single instrument.
This is exactly what these morons don't think about. They don't think about the flow-on costs.
No,
you know, this is the danger of nationalism, right? And in actual fact, that's what sort of we're going to be talking about in the after show. So if you aren't a Patreon subscriber right now and you want to hear us go on a little bit more about this, a little bit left of field to what we normally talk about, jump on. It's about $3 a month or something like that. Basically less than the cost of a cup of coffee a month, and you can help us go a little bit of the way to keep the show on the air.
Yeah.
But we'll be talking about that in the after show. So I don't want to give away too much right now, but you're right. It is complete and utter bullshit.
It is. And the short version to all this is, like, if you know any Brexiteers out there, we're going to put a link in the show notes to what this is going to be talking about. If you've got Brexiteers who like to go abroad to see music, because I know there's a hell of a lot of people in England who do that, share this with them and show what an absolute shit show they voted for.
Absolutely.
Because what they're, between their blind racism, because I've yet to find anybody who voted for Brexit for anything other than purely racist reasons, come at me, haters, and COVID-19, between those two things, they're basically going to destroy the UK music business.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, we're already seeing basically there's a lot of people who are saying that, you know, there's going to be 2/3 of musicians who are going to be out of work, and they're going to not only be out of work, but they're going to leave the industry.
We've already seen it. We've seen it now. Ross Jennings of Haken has had to take on photography work to keep his house and to keep things going in his household. The members of Anathema have essentially disbanded because they can't afford to stay together anymore. And the UK is back in lockdown again. So it's like, here we go again. It's like, you know, all of the problems that got instituted from the first lockdown are going to hit hard again. And that's if they get their shit together and or manage to come out of their second lockdown without another outbreak, which is looking less and less likely with each passing day. Yeah, because what are we moving into? We're moving into winter. We're moving into Christmas time. You know, I mean, I dare say it'd be an incredibly unpopular government to say, "Nah, we're going to extend lockdown through Christmas." Fuck yous. You can't go and hang out with your family at Christmas time. Not happening.
Well,
we've already seen that. We've already seen that in this country.
Yeah, well, when they tried to do it and everyone sort of got all, "Oh, but I want to see Grandma at Christmas." It's like, yeah, this thing called technology, do it over a screen. But this is me and my lack of Christmas time anyway. I find Christmas time just, you know, I was up visiting a friend of mine up northwest the other day. And they already had the Christmas trees up. This is 2 weeks ago. Right,
the Christmas crap's been in the store since the back end of October, though.
Yeah, I know. It's fucking calm down, people. Like, you know, it's just so unbelievable.
To be fair, the Christmas stuff,
bullshit.
The Christmas stuff has turned up a bit later this year. Actually, usually it turns up the week after Father's Day.
Yeah, right.
Which is in September.
Anyway. It angers me. It really does. Anyway, we could lose the whole show to this, so we'll move on.
We almost did. So speaking of the UK and speaking of UK-based artists, there was a post up from our dear friends of the show, Hats Off Gentlemen, It's Adequate. They have a new EP that is currently being worked up. There's going to be a couple of songs on there. Yes, some of it is going to be about depressing songs about robots, which is sort of the thing that we're all here for when we listen to this band. There's going to be a few other things on this EP as well. We'll throw a link in the show notes to the public Facebook post that was made about it. If you are not a fan of this band and you have not listened to their music, for Christ's sake, mate, rectify that immediately. These guys are fantastic.
Absolutely. Very, very, very cool band, and hopefully what will be an amazingly good album as well. I mean, I don't think I've heard anything from them that's been bad, to be bluntly honest.
Absolutely.
Another album as well that has been announced as well is Periphery's first live album, Live in London.
Periphery haven't done a live album yet?
Yeah, tell me about it. It's actually out now, but we haven't obviously had the chance to talk about it. They've said that, you know, they've always wanted to do a live record. There's so many recordings of them online and all that sort of stuff, but they didn't know when to do it. So
they chose now when no one can. They chose now when everyone is sort of waiting for them to kind of perform live again.
Bang on, yeah. Which is actually a really, really smart thing. So to give you an idea, it's 10 tracks. It's got Reptile, Church Burner, Remain Indoors, Follow Your Ghost, Scarlet, Marigold, It's Only Smiles, Psychosphere, Blood Eagle, and Loon on it. So it's not a huge album, but it's definitely worth a look. At that particular one, be a lot of fun. Obviously, we have the upcoming Distant Memories album as well. From Dream Theater as well. And Steve Hackett has announced a new acoustic album as well called Under a Mediterranean Sky. It's going to be out January next year. So we'll keep a close eye on that one and have a quick look at it when it becomes available.
So I think that about brings us to the end of the news, and now we're going to jump into our main topic. Now, we were originally going to do a track-by-track on Fate's Warning's Long Day Goodnight, but I think we may just end up talking about this record a little bit more like just a straight-up album review rather than going track-by-track on the on the songs. What do you reckon, Dave?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on it. It's not... This album for me doesn't have a lot of things to be read into. I think you'd have to be you know, maybe a little bit mentally deficient to not figure out exactly half of the things they're talking about because they're quite blatant.
Oh, yeah.
In some of the and so on and so forth. So, you know, less to chew on in this album, I think. So definitely ideas to talk about it.
Yeah, there's less it's less metaphorical. It's less sort of, I mean, this is probably the first record I've heard this year to overtly reference lockdowns, the musician's take on this whole COVID-19 situation. And then later on in the record, we get some fairly overt political commentary directed at GOP and directed at Trump. Like, yeah. You don't need to be, I mean, we can start there if you like. I mean, you know, yeah, we can start with Liar, where he's, you know, the first verse goes, forget to understand where the man made his fortune. It was handed down to him. And we all know it's wrong. Lion concert again, flailing in the words they spin. To be undone, they have to look below and beyond. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't need to read tea leaves to figure out what that song is about.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. So.
And same story. Yeah, exactly. And then, like, the same story again with the top of the record. We have the song called The Destination Onward, which, you know, again, opening paragraph or opening verse. It's been a long time since I've been home, and like a dream, these thoughts return to me. Remember how it felt, although I forget the names, the faces are stranger now. Like, yeah, like, again, it's a fairly obvious, it's like, you know, people come back, you know, you've been on tour for a while, you come back, everybody's wearing masks, everybody's locked down. And then we get into the second song called Shuttered World. Again, not a particular, you know, not exactly sort of a not too much symbolism going on there. The chorus, try to hide in some shuttered world again and find it hard to align loss with win. All this leads to indecision, one more way to sow division. It's not the end. There's a long, long way to go.
I think it's, you know, the bridge of that song is really interesting where it says, ahead of me, I see the days where things were never meant to stay. Look back and inwards, what was left inside? Oh, I've sacrificed. I've laid it down. Uncertain of the future. Still, I take another step. For now, I know that I am home.
So exactly.
I think it's really, really interesting that there is a little bit of, you know, obviously anti-division kind of stuff coming out of these guys. But also there are some parts of it where it's like if you took them out of context, you'd go, okay, that's actually a really, really cool thing. But within context of entire songs, they're a bit obvious, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the first half of this record is definitely focused in a more melancholic sort of edge of a crashing wave kind of theme. You know, it's a time of change, and we have song titles like The Destination Onward, Shuttered World, Alone We Walk, Now Comes the Rain. You know, we can sort of all visualize that the direction that they're going in. And then we get to the second, and it's a little bit more down-tempo, a little bit, you know, sort of, yeah, interesting chordal things and movements there. And then we get into the second half of the record, which is definitely more in line with what I had in mind when I think Fate's Warning. You know, driving prog metal songs, interesting technical passages. And that probably kicks off with the middle of the record where we have the lead-off single that we've already discussed, Scars.
Yeah.
You know, in the story they're telling, it sounds like a rebirth from all the uncertainty and the melancholy from the first half. You know, things like Scars, Begin Again. You know, that sort of thing.
I tend to agree with you. I think as well, the title itself, Scars, scars are reminders of past events, right? So not only in a metaphorical way, you know, they've got some scars on them from, you know, the stuff that blah, 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 emotional scarring, etc., but also physical scars. You know, so, you know, if you get cut deep enough and your body heals, it heals into a scar. I've got a couple myself, and as most people do. So I think what's really interesting is that this song itself, you know, is sort of talking about, you know, I stand above the smoking ruins. I can pick up the pieces again. You know, that kind of whole idea of, you know, picking up the pieces and moving on. But then the actual verses themselves is saying things like, but I'm not going to forget all the things that have happened. In actual fact, I'm concerned that it's going to come back, you know, and that's what scars can remind us of. You know, if you're unfortunate enough to have, you know, cancer or something like that, and you wind up having something taken out, tumors and so on and so forth, then you'd have a reminder every single day as you stand in the mirror, okay, there's that scar from that tumor I got cut out. When is it going to come back? You know, and the thing, delving in a little bit further and then getting a little bit deeper on it, the mental toll that those things take is really, really massive as well. So it wouldn't surprise me if this particular song was actually highlighting a lot of those things without highlighting them, because there are a lot of things that are coming out of this whole, you know, COVID thing, and then all the divisions such in the US, rise of China, etc. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world at the moment. And the question is, what are we going to look like on the other end of it when we come out of it?
Yeah, exactly. How much of this sort of, the wearing of masks, the, you know, more vigilance towards personal hygiene and that sort of thing is going to carry forward into the new normal, I guess, if you want to call it that.
That's right. I mean, I can remember in Sydney we had a cryptosporidium scare a little while ago, which is, I think it's like a bug or something that lives in the water supply, can live in the water supply. This is like 2000, 2001. And everyone was told you have to boil your water. Of course, a lot of people just started buying bottled water and it stuck. Before that time, very rarely saw bottled water on the street or anything, and now it's everywhere. Same thing with water restrictions, right? You never saw car wash places or anything like that in Sydney ever before water restrictions. Once water restrictions came in, they went up everywhere, and they've stuck, and people keep getting their cars washed there and so on and so forth. So I think this is going to be one of those major turning things, and I think – turning points in history. And I think that people's hygiene and making sure to sanitize hands and all that sort of stuff, keeping a bottle of sanitizer in the car and all that, I don't think that's going to go away.
No, I don't think so. I think it's just one of those things that's going to stay. And if you are unwell, you wear a mask, that sort of thing. And that's also, as well, the other thing that's not going to go away is a whole bunch of people around the world who think it's all crap. That's not going anywhere either. You know, you've got the one side. You've always got the other side. The anti whatever, who say it's all rubbish. It's all a lie. It's not actually that big a deal. Rah rah. Unfortunately, we've still got one of those assholes in the fucking White House right now. But you know,
only for the next however many days, my friend.
Oh man, we'll go down the stack later on my personal opinions on that theory. But yeah, I'm still not so sure about that.
We'll see. I think it's probably for the better in the long run that these things are happening. I mean, the flu rate's down this year, which is nice. Got that going for us, which is nice.
Yeah. To come back to the record slightly, we should probably talk about the music in a way. In music on this record, the one thing I was surprised by, and although I probably should be more familiar with Fates Warning than I actually am, given that they like the big three of American prog metal, you know, you've got these guys, you've got Queensryche, and then obviously Dream Theater.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that surprised me was how full it sounded for just three piece. We've got Jim Mathias on the guitar, you've got Joey Vera on bass, and you've got Bobby Jarzembeck on the drums. That's that, and then Ray Alder on vocals. I mean, that's it. There are no other. There's no second guitars. There's no keyboards. Okay, yeah, there's a lot of multi-tracking of guitars and stuff, but it's all basically one guitar player, which is very interesting because you think about prog and you think two guitars, you think keyboards. But here we don't have that.
I mean, the thing is, it's amazing what you can do with double tracking. I mean, if you look at a more Australian version of this kind of thing, you've got Cog, right? And if you've ever seen Cog live, as any of the listeners have, or you or I have, Hoggy, they are massive. And what's amazing about them, and I assume it would be somewhat similar for Fates Warning as well, is that when they play live, they don't sound like a three-piece. They sound like a six-piece. They sound huge. And you can do that on an album pretty easily because you can double track, you can triple track, you can quad track guitars. You can, you know, put all the sound effects in and all that sort of stuff and everything. And you can make it sound a lot richer. You can do the, all the stuff with the voices and all that kind of stuff. And you can make it sound a lot bigger than it actually is. But doing it live is very, very difficult. Now, obviously, Fates Warning have been around for a long, long time, so their live game must be on point.
Yes.
So I think it would be really interesting to see them, see what they do live.
Yeah, whether or not you'd be able to do the – I mean, there's obviously a lot of double tracking, triple tracking, et cetera. Whether or not you do that live or whether you just run tapes or you maybe you get a second guitar player in, I don't know. Mm. They have had at various points in time of the band second guitar players. But as of now, they don't. It's just the four of them.
And they may get an extra guy just for live stuff as well. You never know.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, the other thing about this record as well, and this is definitely a criticism of some prog metal bands, they tend to get lost in like extended middle sections. I mean, we spend a whole one of the biggest, I'm going to use the word offenders here, if you can hear the air quotes around my word there, it's Transatlantic. They get, like, there are hilariously extended middle sections just for the purposes of there being an extended middle section.
Yeah.
Particularly on the second record, Bridge Across Forever. That is probably one of the more guiltier parties there. Here on this record,
the Bridge Across Forever.
Exactly, exactly. Here on this record, though, we don't have that. Mm. We don't have, I mean, yes, there is one song where we have an extended introductionary section where it's like 5.5 minutes, but it never feels bloated. It always feels like we're going in a direction. There's a straight line to where we're going.
Yes,
and there's technicality and there's extended, there's like interesting parts and things like in The Way Home, for example, but nothing overshadows the song.
Yes, and I think that's one of the things that's really, really, really good about Fates Warning is that it is a bit more direct than what a lot of prog people would probably be looking for almost.
Yeah.
But everything is in service of the song. Unlike, as you say, you know, sometimes you get these big, grandiose middle sections and you go, why did you have this here? You know, a great, great example of that is one of my favorite Dream Theater songs, I'm just going to go with one of my favorites, The Count of Tuscany.
Yeah. Right? That huge ass middle section. Big middle section didn't work. Like live, it didn't work.
In particular, the part with the volume swells.
Yeah,
you know, that was always a Petrucci live thing, and then they put it on a record.
Yeah,
and when he played it live, he made it longer. So a 19-minute song went for like 28 minutes because there was a whole bunch of wankery in the middle.
On that tour, they played it as an encore. It's like, come on, it's like bad place to put it. Was it an encore? Or was it the last?
No, it was the encore.
It was the encore.
And
the same thing you had happen with Illumination Theory. You had this big string section in the middle. Sounds great, didn't really add anything.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like, even like when I listen to that song at home on the record, I skip over that part. Mm. I'm just like, it breaks down a bit and then it comes back. It just sort of feels like this bit in the middle that didn't really need to be there.
Mm. I mean, friend of the show and you and I actually, Hoggy, we had a chat with Joshua Batten about this recently, about what makes prog. You know, and I think that's kind of one of the things that we didn't touch on, and that is you've got to push the envelope, but it has to be in service.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just be like, oh, we're going to do, you know, throw in a synth thing here for 9 minutes. It's like, why? What's the point of that? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
To get fans to skip forward 9 minutes.
Or basically just satisfy some ego thing of putting a synth thing on a thing for the fun of it, you know, something there for someone's ego. And it's like, well, no, it doesn't need to be there. You would hope, though, that a band that's been around for as long as Fates Warning has probably learned those lessons and gone, no, we just, you know, everything's in it. We're going in one direction here and we're doing this thing.
Yes.
And we can just sort of, you know, get even like even the really long song on this record, which is the longest Shadow of the Day. I mean, a great exercise in tension and release over a 5.5-minute relentless sort of prog metal opening to a song. You get the twist, and then it pulls completely back to like an electronic drum beat, one guitar and vocals.
Yep.
Then it slowly opens back up a bit and then goes back off into, you know, into an interesting riff and prominent bass tones driving drums for another 2.5 minutes to the end of the song.
You know, absolutely.
Nothing. There's no flab. There's no sort of extemporaneous sort of widdly bits for the sake of it. It's all there because it needs to be there.
Absolutely. And I love the title of the song too, I want to say, you know, The Longest Shadow of the Day. You know, because it's sort of referencing that whole idea of it's, you know, everyone's in the shadows, but the longest shadow of the day always occurs either right at sunrise or right at sunset. So there's a bit of ambiguity as to what they're talking about. What's the next part of that? And I'm probably just reading into this kind of stuff, but I just think I think it's an interesting title.
Yeah, I think you've probably nailed it. And then you get the one, the immediately what follows that is the last song.
Yeah, which is hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, it returns to where the record begin, a reflective, melancholic, two acoustic guitar piece where they're sort of like, well, I've written the final chapter. Yeah, the final chapter is here. I've written the final song. Now what? Sort of thing. That's basically the ethos of that song.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I mean, it is an interesting album. It's definitely worth a listen. You know, it's not something that I would necessarily go back to. Fate's Warning are, they're prog metal powerhouses and I respect them, but not exactly my favorite. But then again, I'm starting to get that way with a lot of music now. So I wonder whether or not in my age, I'm just starting to get really jaded. But you know, I think it's a really good album. I would have liked to see, you know, a little bit more, I suppose, a little bit more symbolism and so forth in the writing, you know, a little bit less direct, you know. Oh, this song's called Liar. It's about Donald Trump. No shit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know,
here's another song called Glass Houses, you know, rise up, wipe away those blinding ashes, take off the tether that demands devotion, the tether that demands, you know, you lie and defend. The truth is blurred behind the glass house you live in. Again, don't need to read tea leaves to figure out what that one's about.
Exactly. You know, even I mean, they're very direct in their lyrics, right? So, you know, it's just.
I mean, that can be a good thing, though. That can be a good thing, yeah, especially absolutely. If you're trying to, if you've got. Yeah, you've got something you want to say. There's no point sort of sugarcoating it too much or trying to, you know, symbolism. And, you know,
Roger Waters is a great example of that. I mean, you know.
Yeah, when it comes to directness and anger, he does it very well.
He certainly does.
Especially as he becomes, well, effectively a raving old man.
Exactly. Trump is a pig, everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Picture the leader with no fucking brains. Again, exactly. Not difficult. But in that, he could be talking about any leader. He just happens to be talking about Trump.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that he's talking about Trump, though.
He could as easily be talking about Netanyahu, for example, for instance, but, you know.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. Although he keeps that off the record. You get it in the live show, you don't get it on the record.
That's right.
Can you imagine what would happen if you put something like that on a record? Good grief.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it.
The firestorm online would just be insane. I mean, it's already pretty bad, but it would just hit mainstream and go nuts. You know.
But look, new Fate's Warning album, I suppose at the end of the day, it's a thumbs up from me. I'm not going to give it 2 thumbs up. It was good. It didn't want to make me listen to it again, though. What did you think, Hoggy?
I enjoyed this record. Again, yes, it's a little bit more. It's less symbolic and more direct than some of the other records that we've talked about this year, because there's been quite a bit of that. There's been quite a lot of that, and it's been very good. But it is quite nice to see something a little bit different, a little bit more direct. And again, it's like it's all in service of the song. There's nothing, there's no flab, there's no excess here. Something you would expect from a band who's been around as long as Fate's Warning has.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something that I think other bands in the scene could take a look at and sort of think about what that sort of thing, because I definitely think the tide has turned against that sort of, okay, yeah, you get that sort of excessive solo-y intricate guitar in sort of the jazz fusion direction. That seems to be where that's ending up.
Yep.
You know, that sort of thing. But in the prog and in the prog metal, you generally don't get so much of that anymore. I think it's more in this sort of direct, in more of a directness and trying to find interesting ways to do those sort of interesting musical, technically difficult things, but constrain them to a song.
Absolutely. And make it service the song. That's the big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Who'd have thought that like this sort of like streaming second wave of vinyl era would bring that about? You know,
exactly. You know, and I think it's great. I genuinely do. You know, if you've got a constriction there, and you have to have a song done in 70 minutes. You know, sorry, an album done in 70 minutes. That's it. That's as far as you can go. Then I think it's brilliant. You know, I mean, that's a CD, but I mean, you know, vinyl is, what's vinyl?
40 something odd minutes. I think you can push it to like maybe 25 minutes aside before you start to run out of room.
Yeah. So, you know, it's amazing. It's really amazing. And I think it's great.
Yeah. It might be a fun topic to revisit again one day, but like actually good 2 CD records or actually good double vinyl records.
Well, I can think of one straight off the top of my head.
You're thinking of The Wall, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely.
That is like 3.5 minutes too long for one vinyl.
Yeah, but it's still a double vinyl, so it still counts.
It is, but it's only just a little bit. It's like just over the side into a 2 vinyl. You also have the same thing with Tommy. Tommy is the same. It's only just a little bit too long for one vinyl. You got to put it on 2. And the same thing with The Wall and 2 CDs. It's about 4 minutes too long for 1 CD. You end up with 2. And then we can get into like other double CD records, you know. We've spoken more than enough on this show about The Astonishing. The other one that I can think of that comes to mind is Tales from Topographic Oceans, which is like the quintessential bloat and pomp of 70s prog.
Absolutely.
Like people within the scene who think of like bloat and pomp in prog, they think of Works Volume 1 by Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and they think of Tales from Topographic Oceans by Yes. Those two records are at the top of the list.
I think this is definitely a good topic that we might revisit some point.
We should probably come back to it at some point.
Absolutely. But I think that just about ends our main topic. What do you reckon?
I think so. We should move on to our album reviews. Now, I want to come up with a different title for this section. I don't know what we're going to call it, Dave. What do you reckon? We need to come up with something, because we just review albums all the fucking times. So maybe we should come up with some sort of different name for this section.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, anyway. we'll figure something out. Anyway, the album that I gave to you, Dave, was a record that has generated a little bit of controversy within the scene, although I don't exactly know why. A record by a band, Orteca. The record is called Sign. What did you think of this album?
I thought it was really interesting.
Interesting good or interesting bad?
I can see why it's created controversy, right? It's, for starters, it's their shortest record in, well, like 10 years or something, right? But it is very much not a, because it falls into that electro dance, you know, electronica kind of sphere, right? But there is very, very little percussion on this album.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really sit, it doesn't really sit in that electro driving sort of beat, kind of beat matching area. But it doesn't, when there is percussion and so on and so forth in there, it creates really interesting time signatures and really interesting flows and rhythms and so on and so forth. I would actually go so far as to say that this is a very, very, very well done electronic album, but not electronica. I think it's something that is done, you know, where you've, and I've done albums like this myself, where you have really long, 5, 6, 7 minutes of no beat dropping, no, you know, there's nothing really to keep going. And the brain is trying to figure out exactly where everything sits. And because of that, it's a really unique listening experience for everyone who listens to it. So instead of it being, you know, stuff like Above and Beyond, where you very much, you have a really cool little intro thing and then you have the lyrics come in and then there's the beat that drops and da-da-da and the songs are about 4 minutes long. And everyone goes, yes, okay, I like that song. This one is much more individualistic. So I can see why it's divided the scene. I liked it. I really, really liked it. But it is very, very dense. It's a very deceptive album because it doesn't seem to be as dense as it actually is. I liked it. Would I necessarily put it on at, say, a party or anything like that? Probably not.
It's definitely not party music, that's for sure. Maybe like the end of the party when everyone is kind of drunk and or stoned and you put that on as like the end of the night sort of thing. Maybe it's the end of the night sort of thing to clear people out of your house and get them to go home, perhaps. But not in that sort of, not in a bad way. It's just like one of those things you put on at the end of the night.
Yeah, maybe.
It's interesting you bring up the beat dropping thing, because I always assumed the beat dropping thing was like a ridiculous trope of the electronica. Like, you could just see it coming and it's like, oh yeah, here we go. It's kind of like, it's like almost a cliche of the genre.
Yes.
This is me putting on back on my Boo Electronica prog snob hat for rock snob hat for a second.
But it's also like, I mean, those sorts of beat drops and all that kind of stuff has also influenced its way into, you know, metalcore music and metal music. You know, you have breakdowns, which are essentially
essentially the same thing, but with guitars instead of like bass drum, bass, and so it's all sort of is really. It's basically the same thing, isn't it? Because it's still like it's the bass. The bass is coming in with a big driving riff and that sort of thing.
It is
essentially the metal version of a breakdown. Which in itself is a bit of a ridiculous trope of certain metal genres.
That's right. You know, I mean, it is really, 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 it's a really interesting album. But also, just from doing a bit of research on it, I found that apparently the album was mostly finished before the pandemic. But what's interesting about it is if this was an album that was written in the middle of the pandemic, you'd go, yeah, totally, that makes absolute complete sense. So again, we have another album that's been ostensibly a bit predictive of things going, but now, this time in a completely different way.
Yeah. It's interesting. Humor me here for a second. How would recording an electronica album be influenced by a pandemic? Because I assume that most of these records are made by one and or two people in their bedrooms. It's very much a home studio, headphones on, manipulating things on a computer, that sort of thing. It's not like a people doing acoustic records because they're stuck at home and they can't play a drum kit, like they haven't got a drum kit in their front room, sort of thing. How would it be different for an electronica out and sort of electronic record?
So electronica and electronic music, is different in that it is based around euphoria. So, and yes, that's partly to do with the drugs in the scene and so on and so forth, but it's also to do with the uplifting or the downbeat sort of feel of particular different genres. So generally speaking,
that's sort of all in service of a reaction live.
Well, yes, that's correct. And it's also about how you feel when you're making it as well. So, you know, for me, a lot of my electronic music back early in the day when I was DJing, when I was doing all that kind of stuff, it was very melancholic, very downbeat, because naturally that's the kind of person that I am. I'm much more a melancholic, sort of persanguine kind of personality type. When I start looking into music and things like that, the things that resonate with me are generally speaking the darker sort of sounds of things. If you're locked away in a house for months on end because you can't go anywhere because your country is in lockdown, you're probably likely to talk about doing electronic albums if you are an electronic artist, who or the album which will be, you know, far less about, you know, the beats and the drives and making everyone feel good and all that. And it's like, well, okay, cool. But I'm feeling like dog shit. So I'm going to, you know, make an album that's far less happy than it normally is. And one of the easiest ways to do that is pull the drums out.
Yeah, take the drums away, manipulate forward. and do down tempo kind of things as well. You pull the tempo back, you take the drums away, and you make these, so without turning it into basically sort of dream house, I guess, or like a sort of just ambient synth things, move it around that way.
Yeah,
it's very interesting. It's interesting.
It's a very interesting genre of music.
This is why I wanted to give you. This is why I wanted to give you this record, because this was a record that was suggested to me by my wife. We had a bit of a listen to it. And I'm like, this would be really interesting to get Dave's opinion on this, because you are by far, out of the two of us, by far and away the more sort of well versed in the electronic music than I am. That's why I gave you this record. I thought this would be an interesting little jumping off point where we can discuss that sort of world for a bit.
Many, many late nights behind DJ decks will do that to you, my friend. But it is really, really interesting. It's definitely worth a listen, in my opinion. And it's definitely worth something. Everyone will find something very different in this album. And that's what I really like about it. So definitely, definitely worth it. You know, I'm going to go with one thumb up, because it's great. It's fantastic. I don't think I could see myself listening to it again and again and again, though. It doesn't have that repetitive love for me.
Yeah.
But it's still great. And if you're listening to this, do yourself a favor, go out and listen to it. It is fantastic. Now, Hoggy, last time I gave you Theo's new album, Figureheads. What did you think?
I liked this record. There's a lot of elements of the classic Euro prog sounds here, but mixed in with some modern sounds and some modern production. It was very, very interesting. Some of the songs do kind of drag a little bit. I mean, that's to be expected for a 4-song record where the shortest song is just short of 10 minutes. But I'm not bad about it, because it sort of all flowed as kind of like one piece. Certainly that's the way I listened to it anyway. I just sort of listened to it. I wasn't sort of paying too much attention to the different songs. I think they all sort of flowed from one to the other. A very interesting record, quite good. Again, if you're into that sort of, you know, Anubis Wobbler IQ kind of classic prog sound, this one's probably something for you guys out there.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it, and that's why when I first heard it, I was like, oh, this feels like a Hoggy album, so he's going to get
this one's got my name written all over it. Kind of how I felt like with the Rick Wakeman record, where it's sort of like, you know, he put, you know, basically sort of had this, he's like, I'm going to write a record for that guy.
Absolutely.
All right.
So what have you got for me next week?
So over the last couple of months, my usual regular shipment of prog magazines has been delayed, which is another fun topic we might discuss a bit later on anyway, watching all the people in America complain where their thing is, and then you look at who's in charge of the US Postal Service over there. But anyway, so finally they all turned up, and I had a chance to listen through to the prog CDs that come with those magazines, which are an excellent treasure trove of new and interesting prog music. Most of it is geared in a Euro prog kind of direction, but there was one that really stood out for me. It's by a Norwegian band called Pixie Ninja. The album is called Colors Out of Space. I want you to have a listen to this record and tell me what you think.
Okay, I will do.
So what have you got for me?
This week I have a brand new album that's only come out about a week ago, from a band called Great Wide Nothing. The album is called Hymns for Hungry Spirits, Volume 1. I'll get you to have a listen to it and let me know what you think next time.
I'm hoping the Volume 1 is in service of a Volume 2 at some point in time, or whether this is like some sort of Metropolis Part 1 goof where you just chuck Part 1 on there.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. Which is totally influenced from Rush's, like, Gangster of Boats trilogy Part 4 of the Roll of Bones record. So I wonder if that's part of that. But anyway, I shall have a listen to that record, and I will return with my opinions in a week or two's time. Now, next week on the show, we've already made a bit of a mention on our social media channels about what we are going to be doing next week. We are going to do some sort of fan Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any questions for us, literally anything at all, please send them through to us. You can find the little, we've made a little post on our 98 podcast Facebook page, so you can go there and add in your questions. We will also be putting a shout out on Twitter. If Twitter is your preferred medium to hear about us, you can send your questions in there. Or if you'd prefer them to be if you prefer yourself to be anonymous in asking these questions, you're more than welcome to send us an email. You can find the contact form on our website at the98podcast.fireside.fm/contact.
Absolutely. We do love hearing from all of you. We love hearing your opinions and your ideas. So we'd love to hear what you have got to say about us and any questions that you might have. It might be, hey, what color are Dave's eyes? Or, he talks about these guitars. What have you got in your collection? Or it could even be, whereabouts does Hoggy live? I want to buy him a coffee. Or it could be something a little more serious about music and what we think about particular things. So definitely send those through.
Absolutely. You can find us on Twitter at 98FM. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/98FM. And you can find the links to the show notes for this episode at the98podcast.fireside.fm/65. So until the next time you hear from us on the 98 podcast, thank you all very much for listening. Please stay safe. Please, be kind to one another. I'm trying not to make this sound like Jerry Springer. Be safe, be kind to one another, and we'll see you all next time.
Thanks a lot. See you then.